Hello everyone. Welcome back to Sailing with Sailor, where I take you on a journey around the world while chatting with experts on the political happenings in various countries. Fasten your life jacket, sit back, relax, and enjoy. On today's episode, we'll be sailing all the way to Myanmar, where we'll be taking a deep dive into the country and look at the history and recent violence that has gained national attention. In today's episode, we will look at a variety of topics that have led to a violent state, which is modern Myanmar. Joining me in today's episode is Kayla Panagrosa.
Hi, Sailor. Thank you so much for having me.
Kayla is our expert on ethnic conflict, and she'll be taking a look at the ethnic conflict that has risen in Myanmar. Our next guest is Julia Maddy.
Hi, Sailor. Thank you for this opportunity. I can't wait to get into the discussion.
She'll be talking today about authoritarian regimes and the genocide that has occurred in Myanmar. Our last guest is Sean Kelleher. He is here to talk about political violence and the monopoly on violence, which has caused conflict that has occurred in the country.
Hey, Sailor. I'm so happy to be a guest on the podcast. This is definitely an interesting country that we'll be looking at and talking about today.
Thank you all so much for joining us today. Before we get into the discussion, I just want to give a brief history of the country of Myanmar for the purpose of context. Myanmar, also known as Burma, is located in Southeast Asia. They gained their independence from British rule in 1948. There was a lot of political and ethnic conflict after Prime Minister U Nu took control of the government. Chaos erupted and General Nguyen Win took over the government, leading to a military coup. A student protest erupted and the government killed 100 students and blew up a university building. General San Yu then took control of the government in 1974. More big protests blew up in 1988 and the government promised to start elections for government officials. The National League of Democracy, with Aung San Suu Kyi as their candidate, won in a landslide election in 1990. The military coup ignored the election results. Another huge protest of 50,000 people was held in 2007. The military killed 31 people while trying to contain it. Finally, in 2015, enough candidates from the National League of Democracy won the election, and a democratic government was formed with Aung San Suu Kyi as the leader of Myanmar. She is now the face of democracy in Myanmar. She won a Nobel Peace Prize and became the pride and joy of the country. However, things quickly turned back to chaos for Myanmar. Kayla, can you tell me about the ethnic conflict going on in Burma?
Of course, but first let me talk about what exactly ethnic conflict is and why Burma is especially vulnerable to it. Ethnic conflict is a dispute where ethnic identity or ethnicity is a main factor. For those listening who might not know, ethnic identity is, according to Patrick O'Neill, a set of institutions that bind people together through common culture. It's important to note that ethnicity doesn't work alone in creating conflict. There are a variety of factors that can cause tension between ethnic groups, especially when politics are involved, including population ratio, representation, and past ethnic history, according to an article by Daniel Posner. All of these have played a role in the events taking place in Myanmar. After gaining their independence in 1948, Burma has been struggling to grow an ethnic identity that encompasses and accepts the variety of ethnicities within the country. About two-thirds of the country consist of ethnic Burmans, also called the Bamar. The Bamar typically live a more privileged lifestyle, and they make up the majority of the military and government positions.
So what does the last third of the country consist of? Is their lifestyle drastically different?
The other third of Burma consists of ethnic minorities who have lived a much less privileged life. They have less opportunities in terms of jobs and other areas of life. There is much less development and support in their communities. There is little government representation, they experience abuse at the hands of the military, and they face overall systemic oppression. One of these ethnic minorities are the Rohingya Muslims. In predominantly Buddhist Myanmar, Buddhist extremists have been spreading anti-Muslim propaganda and attacking Muslims. The government continues to promise ethnic equality, but there is no action to back up these promises.
What started the discrimination against the Rohingya Muslims and the other ethnic minorities? Did something cause the groups to dislike each other so much?
There are definitely factors that fuel this conflict even decades later, one being a law that was passed in 1982. The 1982 citizenship law allowed only members of ethnic groups that have been in Burma before 1823, when Britain still controlled parts of Burma, to be full citizens. This really started the notion that the full citizens, which are those who had been in Burma the longest, are the better groups that cannot gain their full citizenship. To make matters worse, people who are not full citizens can't vote or run for political office. They also don't have certain rights like freedom of expression, equal opportunity, and protection against discrimination. The Council of Foreign Relations says that tensions were heightened when military took over in 1962 and curtailed ethnic minorities' rights.
Is there anything being done to stop the oppression of the Rohingya Muslims? It seems like so much abuse is happening, but no one is doing anything about it.
Not much is happening. The International Crisis Group says that the new political system, based on the 2008 constitution, has elements that acknowledge Myanmar's ethnic diversity, such as ethnic affairs ministers and self-administered areas, but long-lasting bias and lack of attention to the issue continue to allow ethnic inequality to go unchecked.
It sounds to me like this is a genocide in the making. Julia, I know you've done some research about this and about the attacks against the Rohingya Muslims in Myanmar. Do you think this could turn into a genocide?
Actually, this already is a genocide. Back in 2017, it started being considered an ethnic cleansing. As Kayla mentioned before, the ethnic minorities can't participate in politics, and they are even excluded from the census. They are not seen as full people by the Buddhist majority. They are seen as outsiders. Not only are they being denied their basic rights like marriage, education, and freedom of religion, the military has committed very violent acts of genocide against them. They have burned down the villages, killed civilians, even children and the elderly, and they have raped women and children. Since August of 2017, 288 villages have been burned down, 6,700 children were killed within the first month of violence.
I thought Aung San Suu Kyi was supposed to be this Nobel Peace Prize winning diplomatic leader that is leading Myanmar to democracy and success. What is being done about this situation?
Well, not much. She continues to deny any claims of genocide. When the country's Independent Commission of Inquiry was asked to speak on the issue, they admitted that the military may have carried out various war crimes, human rights violations, and violations of domestic law. Even after admitting to this, they are still denying any claims of genocide. The government claims that they are only targeting Islamic terrorists within the Rohingya community. However, as we've seen, they are killing young children who obviously are not Islamic terrorists.
I feel like the only reason they would be killing children is to destroy the next generation. If the government isn't doing anything, what has the international community done?
So, for context, almost a million people have fled Burma. Many of these went by foot to Bangladesh, and some went by boat to Indonesia, Malaysia, and Thailand. In March of 2019, Bangladesh started to refuse refugees from Myanmar due to the large amount of them suddenly coming into the country. Almost a year later, in January of 2020, the international courts ruled that the Rohingya must be protected by emergency measures from being violently persecuted. Because Myanmar isn't actually part of the international courts, the courts decided to use Bangladesh's powers to protect the Rohingya and other minority groups.
What happened to the civilians when their only safe space, Bangladesh, began to refuse to let them stay?
Well, you see, this is a prime example of authoritarianism. Patrick O'Neill describes it as a system of power in terms of how and what they deny their citizens. If a government denies participation, competition, and liberty, the three foundational building blocks of democracy, then it is executing a non-democratic rule.
Can you give me some insight on how this is relevant to the Rohingyas?
Absolutely. Bangladesh turned fleeing civilians away and asked those who were getting established in the country to return. However, they refused. Unless Myanmar would restore them full rights, participation, competition, and liberty, they would not return to Myanmar. Bangladesh offered security and freedoms that they could not receive back in Myanmar.
So Sean, can you tell me about the genocide of the Rohingyas applies to the monopoly on violence and state violence?
Yes. So the monopoly on violence is an idea that the states think that it has power to execute force and intimidation against its citizens. They often use and try to gain legitimacy. This connects to the state violence, which is when a state tries to use violence to establish the state. The military coup trying to take over the government is a form of the state violence. Charles Tilly, who is an expert on the issue, talks about the ways that states are made and the reasons for the monopoly on violence. He gives a history of the issue and states how to get control of internal problems and how it can deal to protect from external problems. Dealing with internal problems is essential to the state. So if the state does not have control of their citizens, the country can crumble from within. So states use tools like political violence in order to gain control over their citizens. On February 1st, the military took control of the democratic regime. This was led by General Mi Aung-hlaing. General Mi Aung-hlaing brought up the large amount of election fraud that had taken place to justify the coup. He has placed himself as leader of the country for 1 year, then he said he will be holding another election.
Wow, how has the public responded to the coup?
To be honest, the country has erupted into chaos. There are mass protests that have broken out in some of the major cities. The general has also been trying to say that these protests against the coup are led by terrorists. The government has been meeting the protests with violence and killing as an attempt to try to control the state. The highest death rate of protests in a single day was 144. Because of the chaos, the government has started withholding information from the public, and in some cities where a lot of protests are, like Yangon, phone and internet service has been cut off.
So who are the people that are out protesting?
The citizens of Myanmar are out there showing their support for democracy. There are so many of the actors that participate in these protests are just regular citizens, like teachers, lawyers, and even government workers. But some of the main actors of these riots are part of the Assistance Association for Political Prisoners. The government is taking harsh actions against this group because of the way they have rallied and organized the protests. They are trying to subdue the group by arresting 3,000 people. They have also been shown to assault and torture many of the people. Also, half the troops that have killed are from the AAPP. The U.S. Ambassador from Myanmar, Thomas Vidal, said that these are not actions of professional military or police force. Myanmar people have spoken clearly. They do not want to live under military rule.
Wow, it really seems like there is a lot of unrest when it comes to the country. Do you think that this unrest will end anytime soon?
It is hard to say. It has been 3 months since the coup happened, and there is still a lot of protest and killing that is going on. There is still a lot that is happening within the country, and the military says that it will give a free election at the end of the year. But will this happen, and will it be fair and free? If this election happens and the military steps out of the government, it has the potential to settle the chaos.
I guess we will have to wait and see what happens with this promised election. Let's all hope that everything gets resolved within Myanmar. As usual, I want to start off by thanking our guest speakers for today's episode, Kayla Panagroso, Julia Maddy, and Sean Kelleher. Their expertise in the subject was certainly a great insight on our journey to Myanmar. If you like what you heard, make sure to come back for next week's episode when we set sail to Egypt. For now, this is Sailor saying anchors away.
This episode was hosted by Sailor Garcia, produced by Anchor, edited by Sean Kelleher, written by Sailor Garcia, research done by Kayla Panagroso, Julia Maddy, and Sean Kelleher, information provided by experts Patrick O'Neill, Daniel Posner, and Charles Tilley. Additional sources can be found below.